Session number 3965, reel number 2.
Isn't she in reel 2? Captain, could I ask you for a more detailed description of the medical services on the Gold Coast? We broadened out the discussion rather quickly onto the general education given by the British.
Yes. I cannot speak too highly of the medical, public health and laboratory services provided by the Government Medical Department. Medical officers were stationed in 40 principal centres, and there were 6 hospitals for Europeans and 32 for Africans. On the Gold Coast, stagnant surface water is the breeding place of mosquitoes, and mosquitoes carry malaria. British officers and NCOs going to the Gold Coast were provided with mosquito boots which were tailored to fit under the trousers. Quinine tablets were provided as part of one's kit, and a tablet had to be taken daily. The wife of an officer, or BNCO, was obliged to provide herself with long mosquito boots at her own expense. They reached from the foot to the thigh and were most necessary. The health and sanitary services consisted of a team of a medical officer, assistant health officer, both English, and a staff of trained African sanitary assistants. This team visited European houses and bungalows, houseboys' quarters, troops' lines and offices and stores in their search for mosquito larvae. Even the premises of the governor of the Gold Coast colony was included in the inspection, and if larvae was found, a heavy fine was imposed. A common place for larvae was in flower vases or used tins thrown out by one's boy and allowed to collect water. Needless to say, the menace of the mosquito was constantly brought to the attention of the troops, and they saw to it that no receptacle which could gather stagnant water was left lying about, for they knew that the military penalties were severe. The chief offenders were the Europeans. Medical attention available for the troops was of a high order, and the sick, the lame, and the lazy were vetted by a senior African NCO, and the genuine cases sent to the hospital for inspection and treatment. This arrangement resulted in a high standard of fitness in the regiment, and the troops loved medical operations. NCOs were trained in first aid, and a well-equipped medical chest was taken on bush exercises so that cuts, bruises and scratches, etc., could be attended to. The troops were issued with a matchet as part of their equipment. These were an offensive weapon, and they were kept razor sharp and could be used with great effect in action. Very occasionally, a soldier would go berserk with a matchet, usually after overindulgence in palm wine locally brewed from the palm. There had always been a very high incidence of disease on the Gold Coast, and the mortality rate was tremendous, both among Europeans and Africans, more particularly, of course, the African. And the Colonial Office had decided that the best way to overcome this problem and to achieve a healthy colony was to build up a medical and sanitary service of a very high order, and to this end they provided, or it seemed to me that they provided, unlimited funds.
Could we turn now to your personal position? You're in Accra for almost the whole of your time in the Gold Coast.
Well,
what are your duties here?
Are we on the air? My duties as a battery quartermaster sergeant included the supervision and training of gunners and gun carriers. The battery headquarters was located in a fort about 6 miles outside of Accra, and adjacent were the officers' quarters and mess, the BNCO's quarters and mess, and the troops' lines. The troops were well cared for, and they were accommodated in brick buildings, each man or family having a small room which had to be kept scrupulously clean. This was ensured by weekly barrack inspections. Garrison duties comprised daily drill parades, route marches, lectures on discipline, cleanliness, feet care, and regimental history. About 2 hours a day were allocated for fatigues, such as grass cutting and clearing up around the African lines and European quarters. In common with the rest of West Africa, the Gold Coast has definitely marked seasons. From March to July, the great heat of the Sahara to the north causes an influx from the southern sea of moisture-laden winds, and a major rainy season is the result. August is a month of drought, and the rainfall then continues intermittently during the minor season of September to November, called locally the small rains. From December to January, the lowering of temperature in northern Africa causes a reversal in the prevailing wind direction, and a cold, dry, dust-laden wind, the Harmattan, sets in from the north. In the rainy season, grass grows fast, and grass harbours snakes. This is the reason for grass fatigues. The troops make their own scythes from a long piece of metal which they wield with great skill.
Were there any other differences in your seasonal routine other than the need for grass cutting? Or did you carry out much the same routine throughout the year?
Well, the grass cutting, of course, went on throughout the year.
I see.
Because not only, as I say, did this long grass, which growed fast, harbour snakes, but also it would hide stagnant water, which bred the mosquito.
Do you know the more general organisation of the Gold Coast Regiment?
Yes. The beginning of the regiment was in a force of Hausas recruited in northern Nigeria in 1865. In the 1930s, the organisation of the Gold Coast Regiment was a regimental headquarters at Kumasi in Ashanti, a light battery, a light artillery battery, that is, at Accra, and the composition of regimental headquarters was one infantry battalion less one company stationed at Tamale, Northern Territories, a signal section, a regimental depot, a regimental quartermaster stores, and a regimental band of Africans with a British bandmaster.
How were Africans recruited during the 1930s? Who who made the contacts, do you know?
Yes. Africans would come to us from the bush. Sometimes they would come from distances as far away as 500 or 600 miles, and I learned afterwards that the usual contact was between the tribal chiefs and district commissioners or their assistants, and also that missionaries would very often advise suitable men to go and join the army, especially where there was a great poverty existing and no work for these men to do.
And was recruitment popular? Did you ever have any problems recruiting?
No. The thing I did notice when I got to regimental headquarters was that every day there would be a band of Africans over at the regimental headquarters offices just sitting there, and these chaps would sit there sometimes for days until such time was found for them to be interviewed, which meant finding a suitable interpreter and then finding out where they come from, that is the name of their tribe, the name of their chief if possible, and the most important thing, why they wanted to become a soldier.
Where did most of the troops come from? Were they from the north or the coast or the Midlands or Shanty?
The regiment never accepted any coastal Africans for the Gold Coast Regiment.
Why?
Because they were far too sophisticated and they were unsuitable to become soldiers.
With the disciplinary problems?
Yes, there would have been great disciplinary problems. We felt in the regiment that we preferred a wild bushman to come and join and be trained at the regimental depot and afterwards in a unit to become a soldier was in a way a great pleasure, but we would hate the thought of having to train a coastal African to become a soldier, because it just wouldn't have been a success. And all the agitation against British rule was carried out in the coastal territories, and for this reason we never considered that the coastal African could make a soldier.
What was the African uniform?
Well, the two lots of uniform, the ceremonial uniform and the what you might call the work uniform. The work uniform was just a shirt and shorts. The gun carriers of the regiment wore a distinctive khaki blouse. For ceremonial purposes, there was in the light battery a red fez worn with a palm badge on the front of the fez, and the fez had a tassel, a blue zouave jacket piped with yellow braiding, khaki shorts, and puttees. For going into bush, by the way, the African, of course, was provided with chaplis and chapli socks to protect his feet.
What were chaplis?
Chaplis. They were leather sandals which strapped up at the side, and the chapli socks which they wore under the sandals were of a high-grade leather capable of standing up to the wear and tear of the climate. And as I say, that the socks were to protect the feet, because in bush there were all sorts of things such as short grass as sharp as a razor, which would cut the feet to pieces, and for that reason it was essential to protect their feet.
And they took to all this?
Oh yes. As a matter of fact, the troops always, I should have mentioned there that the distinction between the light battery and the infantry regiment was that where the battery wore blue Zouave jackets, the infantry soldier wore red Zouave jackets.
And the Africans liked their uniform, whatever the colour.
Well, they liked it very much, and they loved ceremonial parades, and they showed great enthusiasm. I think basically that this was due to the fact that the regiment had a British regimental sergeant major from the Guards and at least one other guardsman, and the troops had been told all about the smartness and precision of the Guards, and we often told them that they were the guardsmen of Africa, and they liked this. And on parade they were extremely smart, they had a wonderful bearing, and their drill was always perfect.
Was discipline strict? Did it need to be strict?
Yes. We found that as we were dealing with a man who started as a very uneducated and uncivilized African, that it was essential for them to learn that discipline was of paramount importance. This was always emphasized with them, and also the penalties of committing military crimes. This, of course, was always explained to them by the Sergeant Major, and they were left in no doubt about what the punishment would be if they committed any serious crimes. It was embodied in the Gold Coast Ordinance that the Gold Coast Regiment was empowered to administer corporal punishment, and any serious offence committed by the African soldier was referred to his company commander, who would consider the case at length. He'd weigh up all the evidence, he'd judge the nature of the crime, and if it was something which was, in his opinion, was serious, he would award the African either 6 strokes or 12 strokes. These strokes were administered by the African Sergeant Major. A British officer or NCO never had any part in administering corporal punishment. This was a very strict rule in
was
the regiment.
Was it a public administration of this?
Well, it wasn't a thing that was advertised. If the man was guilty of a serious crime and brought before the company commander, the punishment would be administered right away. And it was always known right away in the troops lines whether or not a man was going to be was going to receive 6 lashes or 12 lashes, and this, as a rule, was a general signal for the mammies to come from the lines to witness it. And we never dissuaded the mammies from witnessing the corporal punishment, because the African soldier didn't like the mammies witnessing it, and we found that it had a great deterrent effect. And if a man got 6 strokes or 12 strokes, as a rule, we found that he never came back for a second lot.
And what sort of military crimes would come into this category?
Well, one of the crimes that arose now and again was the taking of another soldier's wife, enticing her away from her man. Another thing was gross insubordination against an African NCO or an African sergeant. And we found that this mostly occurred after the troops, in their off-duty periods, had gone down the town and drunk palm wine and got really drunk and, generally speaking, didn't know what they were doing.
How long did it take you to train new recruits?
It took longer in the light battery than it did in the infantry regiment. This was because that the gun is a very difficult thing for an African to get to know. I mean, he will see a gun fired, but he's got no idea what causes the firing. And for that reason, we found that it took us about 6 months to train an African to get to know all about the gun. That is, how we assembled it, how we loaded it, and how we directed fire onto a target. To them, of course, it was a really wonderful thing, the light gun of the Goldfuss Regiment. But the gunner, once he became absorbed in gunnery, became extremely keen. And at the end of about 6 months, they were quite capable of assembling the gun, taking it into action and firing blank rounds of ammunition in a very short space of time. The gun carriers, of course, they were considered inferior to the gunners, because their job was to carry the guns, and all they had to do was to position themselves against one corner of their bearer.
The bearer being a sort of stretcher.
Yeah, like a stretcher, mm-hmm. like a large stretcher. Put their head pad on the top of their head, and all they had to do was to learn to carry the bearer in rhythm. By that I mean that, as you can see, if they were all out of step, the gun piece would be knocked off in no time. But these African gun carriers, they were trained in about 3 months, and they became very proficient in taking a gun into action, even at the trot.
And how exactly was the chain of command organised when you were on these training sessions? Did you tell the African Sergeant Major what to do?
Yes. The African Sergeant Major was usually a good English speaker, and one would direct the drill to the African, and the Sergeant Major would repeat the drill in Hausa.
So, in effect, the troops were learning from him.
Yes.
And he learnt from you.
That's it. Yes.
And was your senior African NCO efficient? Was he easy to work with?
Yes. Yes, they were very efficient, and very keen. And in the troops' lines, they had their own system of administering justice, which we never inquired into. It's true to say that a lot of cases that would have come to the company commander, minor things generally, would be settled by the sergeant major in the troops' lines.
Yes, I see.